Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Front Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Larimer, today joined by John Endres. Let's get into the news of today, and the first thing is we're still waiting to find out what the ultimate fate of the Government of National Unity will be. There was a much-hyped meeting of the ANC's National Working Committee yesterday, where they were to discuss what the ANC's next move on the GNU would be, and it's not entirely clear what that is. The official headline is that the ANC has decided to reconstitute rules of engagement in the Government of National Unity, saying that they're not going to kick the DA out directly, but that this may in fact be a plan to sort of push the DA out in the long term. A DA insider who spoke to the media said, "I don't think any side is brave enough to walk away. We're all waiting for one to push the other out. It's a wait and see game for us. A part of the problem is the ANC is not ready to share power. That has been the overriding problem from the beginning of this GNU." The ANC, an anonymous ANC source told the media, "We are not deviating from what the president said to the ANC caucus last week, which is to create the conditions for them to leave, because we are going back to the DA to say these are the new rules, and they will predictably say they don't agree. If that happens, we can say if you don't agree with the new rules, you must leave." There's lots of discussion about what exactly is going to happen here or what the new rules would be. It does seem to suggest that the ANC is very upset about the idea that you could possibly criticize the government from within cabinet. One of the rules they've talked about is that, for example, John Steenhuisen will not be allowed to question the government's foreign policy or criticize the implementation of the Expropriation Act. Basically, this seems to be a pattern that they want to also roll out to other GNU members. It won't just apply to the DA, which will, in my opinion, make the GNU nothing but a rubber stamp for the ANC. There's also some talk, which has been kind of downplayed by Fikile Mbalula, that Action SA would get a ministry that is currently owned controlled by the DA. Fikile Mbalula, for his part, in an interview today, said that there was no decision that he was aware of to reshuffle cabinet anytime soon. So who knows what exactly is going to happen. But John, this is all a bit frustrating. It does seem a little bit like the ANC has kind of refused to take any sort of hard decision here. They're sort of trying to weasel the DA out. I don't know. What do you make of this?
Yeah, part. So I think partly you can understand what the ANC is trying to do here, which is that cooperation between it and its largest partner, the DA, has been fraught over this fat issue. Before that, it was sort of quite amicable and easygoing. They rubbed along quite well. And that is now an issue, that like the rules of engagement are not working properly in the way that the ANC wants them to work. And in analyzing this, I think it's helpful to look at what the DA is prioritizing in its negotiating positions and what the ANC is prioritizing. And for the ANC, the priority is the question of power and authority and who gets to make calls. And what the intention, what the goal is for the ANC, I think, is to have a cabinet and a GNU that is an ANC government. It adopts, endorses, and implements ANC policies and not any other policies. That's what matters to the ANC. So effectively what it wants in terms of its partners is doormat partners, so partners who will go along with whatever the ANC wants to do, not criticize. So what the ANC wants is really to have partners who are effectively doormats, who will go along with anything that the ANC wants, that won't criticize it, that won't kick up a fuss, that won't challenge policy, but that will help to implement the ANC program. And what the DA wants is to focus on getting economic growth. So they're actually putting the country first. You know, they're looking at the outcomes that we can get as a country. That's what matters to them. And this, I think, is quite a critical dividing line. And it is a point over which it would not be inappropriate for the GNU to come apart or for the DA to exit, because they can say, look, you know, we're not here to be a doormat. We're not here to constitute an ANC government. This is a GNU. It is a coalition government. And that means that the partners' priorities and views have to be taken into account. Within that context, our priority is on economic growth and on getting jobs into the country. We've made some reasonable and sensible proposals for that. If even those proposals go too far, then we cannot be in this government and we'll have to go out. And then the fault line is going to be in our political discourse. Are you on the side of the parties that increase taxes, that increase the cost of living, that ensure a continuation of no growth, no jobs, Or are you on the other side of that divide? Are you on the side of pro-growth, lower taxes, and more jobs for people? And, you know, that's, I think that's a really good political message to communicate about. So if I was the DA at this point, I'd feel pretty relaxed. I would stick to my guns and say, look, you know, our position is that if we're going to continue, it has to be on the basis of prioritizing the interests of the country, of getting the economy growing. And if you, as the dominant partner, are not interested in that, then we must go our separate ways. And, you know, you'll be left to suffer the consequences.
So I think there must also be some criticism leveled at some of the other parties in the GNU actually over this, who have remained either sort of quite supportive of the ANC or completely silent. So, you know, there are quite a few members of the GNU who campaign essentially as opposition to the ANC and yet so far have not made their voices heard. The Freedom Front Plus is an exception. They've pretty much been on the same page as the DA on a lot of this for some of the same reasons. And there are parties like, for example, the PAC, who, you know, actually do agree for the most part with the ANC's ideological approach to things and are very kind of in the tent in terms of the ANC view of looking at the world. So I guess it makes sense for them to support the ANC on this. But a party like the IFP, the Patriotic Alliance, I mean, what exactly is... do they hope to achieve here? They sort of, their reasons for supporting the budget have always been kind of vague things about stability or, you know, just attacks on the DA saying that they're outrageous or their demands or just kind of taking the ANC's line. And I don't really know what the point of them is if they're just going to support the ANC.
Yeah. And I mean, if you think a bit forward to the next election and election campaigns, if it happens that the DA exits the Government of National Unity and maybe the Freedom Front Plus as well, and the ANC reconstitutes a new GNU with smaller parties, the prospects for those smaller parties are really bad in the next election, because whatever, you know, role they play within that GNU is going to be completely drowned out by ANC policies and positions. So in their long-term interest, they should decide what they want to stand for, and that, you know, I think will work out better for them. So there's a real risk to them in just going along with this.
Indeed. And I think you're already seeing a little bit from that in that Action SA and Build One SA supported this budget, but after all the public criticism against them for that, have sort of kind of tried to backpedal a bit and said, well, you know, we're kind of supporting it just for this time, but then maybe not in the future if there's no reduction in VAT. I don't know if that's really a sustainable position, but I think, you know, that shows that they are under pressure from the public to make clear that they are, in fact, opposition parties. Okay, let's move on to the next story. And this is from us at the IRR. Our colleague Makone Maja is writing to the EFF and to MK. Firstly, to say, you know, that along with them, the IRR is opposed to the VAT increase. And that, you know, these parties should engage with us on looking for ways to make up the money that the VAT increase was trying to sort of, you know, stabilize in our budget. And that the way to do this is to reconsider the estimated 100 billion rands worth of taxpayers' money spent on black economic empowerment premiums, which drive up the cost of almost every single government service. And then instead, we should be embracing the value for money principle. Those parties have done the right thing by voting against the VAT, but their proposed solutions for what we should do to cover the shortfall of the VAT increase is a wealth tax. I believe this has been supported particularly by the EFF. However, there have been some statements recently by the Commission of SARS, which comport with things we've said in the past, that a wealth tax is really probably not going to work, and we've already got a relatively small section of the population, somewhere around 3%, of taxpayers paying a huge percentage of the tax, more than half for sure. So, John, you know, some people will say, okay, well, you know, what's the point? There's no way the EFF or MK are going to get rid of BEE. Why are you talking to those parties? What's your thoughts on this?
So the first thing is that there's a small correction on the number. So BEE premiums is probably around 17 billion rand. So that is the money that's being charged legitimately because the law allows it in terms of overcharging on public procurement. And there's about 132 billion, which is not legitimate, not covered under law. So right. The total number we get to is about 150 billion or so, which we think could be saved by putting public procurement onto value for money basis. If you were to reduce value-added tax from 15 to 11.5%, that would incur a revenue loss of about 100 billion. So we're leaving a big margin. We're saying you could actually put procurement onto value for money, save 150 billion. And of that 150 billion, because you don't know if these numbers are exact, just take two-thirds of that and put it towards a VAT decrease. And that would be good for everyone. And that's, I think, a really good proposal. The MK and EFF claim to be pro-poor. They want to help people reduce their cost of living, make life easier for them. Reducing VAT would do that. And linking VAT to public procurement, I think, is a really clever move here from our colleagues, because those two things belong together. The reason that the ANC is trying to increase taxes and trying to gain more money is because it is spending so much and it is overspending by design. So if you take some of that overspending out, you can actually afford to reduce taxes. My expectations are not great that the EFF and MK will adopt the IRR's proposals, but certainly they should give it some food for thought and hopefully also get some more attention in the public domain over this proposal.
Indeed. I know it's always important to talk pretty much to everyone about important things like this, particularly when there are points of agreement like opposition to that. Okay, last story. Completely left field. Let's go overseas for this one. But it's just such a bizarre story. I couldn't not talk about it. There are estimates that North Korean state employees, essentially spies, have been infiltrating particularly American Fortune 500 companies, pretending to be American software engineers, being paid for doing legitimate work, and then taking that money that they're being paid in their salaries and funneling it back to the North Korean government for use in various projects such as weapons development, its nuclear weapons program. This is been a claim by the US Treasury, State Department, and FBI, as well as some independent reporting. A crypto startup guy who was interviewed by the media in the US says that about 95% of the resumes he's gotten recently in response to a job posting he made, he suspects are from North Korean engineers pretending to be American. He once interviewed a job seeker who claimed to have worked at the same company as him during the time he worked there, but then didn't know any of the details about the company, in which he later realized was in fact someone who had never worked there. It went further when he once asked an interview candidate who he suspected of being a North Korean to say something negative about Kim Jong-un, at which point the candidate refused to answer, got very flustered, and then ended the interview and blocked him on every social media. Which is kind of, shall we say, would raise some red flags. The UN has estimated that North Korean IT workers using this method have generated somewhere between $250 million to $600 million every single year since 2018 when they began running the scam. There's usually teams of workers, and a person who managed to infiltrate one of these groups pretending to be an American going along with it, because often these North Korean groups will hire a local American to pose as their front person in exchange for money. That you essentially have a team of software engineers who helps you to pass interviews by writing responses to interview questions for you while you're being interviewed remotely, and then also will create scripts and automate as much of the work as possible so they can take on as many jobs at a time. They also steal data from these big companies and sell it to others or use it for North Korea's purposes. John, this is such a bizarre story, but it's not particularly out of character for North Korea, a government which is profoundly evil, which counterfeits money, which is involved in the drug trade, which does kind of every illegal and malevolent thing you could possibly think of to raise money. Says some interesting things about the modern world, doesn't it?
And I think one of the most interesting things about this is that the North Korean government, I believe, pursues a policy of autarky. So, self-sufficiency, producing everything yourself, not being dependent on the rest of the world. But as is the case with
They
many
call
author.
it juche, I think, self-reliance.
Yes, self-reliance, exactly. But what they have in common with many other socialist and communist regimes in the world is that they're always starved of foreign exchange. They can't get enough dollars. And now you might say, well, what do they need dollars for? Because, they're self-sufficient, they've got self-reliance. What do they need to pay for that's outside of their country? And the point, of course, is that autarky is, you know, really bad economic policy. It impoverishes the country that's trying to achieve it. It's not really achievable. And ultimately, you are dependent on relationships with other countries and on being able to buy stuff from outside your country. For that, you need foreign exchange. And that is what is driving this hunger by regimes like this and the Cuban government as well, for example, to get their hands on dollars. And the Cubans, for example, will sell their doctors into overseas service and take a large cut of their salary for foreign exchange. The North Koreans, in this case, are, you know, infiltrating programmers in order to get their hands on hard cash. And that is, I think, quite revealing about the foolishness of pursuing autarky, especially in this current time of Trump tariffs and trying to divide the world's trading regions against each other.
No, exactly. Now, it is kind of fascinating, but also kind of genius in the way that North Korea sometimes is that truly it is the closest thing we have in the real world to a supervillain. But yeah. Anyway, that is all the time we have for today. We hope you found the show interesting, and we will see you soon on The Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone, and have a great day.
The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR, or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.